If you missed part of the show or would like to share with your friend, you can also listen to the show by going to NAGB website at nagb.org.bs, scrolling down to the Learn menu to Blank Canvas, where you can find all of our archive shows. While you're there, also don't forget to check out our calendar and all things that's happening at the NAGB. Now, if you weren't with us in the first segment, we are here with Shivani Ramloshan and Sonia Farmer, and we're talking about the Blue Flamingo Literary Festival, but specifically talking about their workshops that they are conducting, a two-day workshop. The workshops will be held on UB campus, the Michael Eldon building, boardroom, third floor. And folks can register on by going to NAGB, and the registration fee is $40. That's for both days, and it's free for UB students. So talk to us a little bit about what you expect. If people are interested, if someone is interested in taking the workshop, do they have to be poets per se, mm-hmm. or what is it, who are you looking for in terms of right. Your participants?
So I think our workshops are connected, they are also going to have their own insular
yes.
sort of themes or mm-hmm. Practices, but I think we come from similar spaces in our own creative practices, and so I think it's inevitable that they will speak to each other, and mm-hmm. I think we will be present in each other's workshops.
Yes,
but I think, so Shivani, your workshop is first, so why don't you start off, and then I'll build on that, because I think that's kind of how I'm going to roll too, is sort of see how your workshop goes, and then I have my plan, but I'll sort of build on that too.
No pressure at all then.
No, absolutely none.
I want the workshop to be and to feel above all things like a welcoming space first.
Okay.
And so there is already so much elitism and selectivity in the international poetry world. I want to really dismantle that idea. So you don't have to have been writing poems for 100 years or 10 years or to have won any kind of award. And maybe the only poem you've ever written is in your notebook. And that's perfectly fine. That qualifies a person to attend this class just as much as someone who has published 5 books.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I believe that kind of equalizing space is good for the collective ego of a group of people wherein, by profession, ego is very present, mm-hmm. almost rampant. So if we could think about how we dismantle ego to really let work come through, I've seen incredible work made that way. In collaboration. And mm-hmm. I think it's incredibly true for what Sonia and I have done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that kind of trust that it takes to allow another writer total access into interpreting the work,
right.
which is what she's done with her letterpress editions of The Red Thread Cycle,
mm-hmm.
which is a true gift. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen them in installation yet, but I'm going to very soon. I'm almost completely sure I will cry with joy. So,
Yeah, it's been good.
So, just back to the workshop, and again, in terms of who should come, because I have had people approach me and ask me, you know, in terms of, I don't know because I'm not a poet.
I think those are the best participants.
Right.
So.
And these are people who haven't necessarily gone to school, MFA programs or even BA programs or anything. They've just done it on their own, which, you know, a lot of local poets, that's how they start, right?
Absolutely.
Again, they don't necessarily have the formal training. And so I think, as you were pointing out, I think that something like someone like you coming in to run a workshop could be very intimidating. You have this international poet coming in to teach this workshop. And so I'm trying to, you know, convince them that just sign up, just go and see.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that this is one of the things that we need to do in terms of dismantling this notion of the poet, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to someone else who's starting, because we all start somewhere.
We do.
Right?
We must do this because poetry is for everyone. Mm-hmm. Historically, as far back as recorded history goes, it has always been a secular, proletarian art. Mm-hmm. And we need to remind ourselves that we own the space of poetry, mm-hmm. whether or not we have a BA, an MFA, a PhD, and anything other than a love for a poem. And that's mm-hmm. all you need. That's all that you need to attend this class.
Okay.
Mm, yeah, that's a beautiful way to put it. I think, like, building upon the idea of poems as belonging to everybody, my part of this workshop, which will be on Friday, mm-hmm. Will be... there will be some writing exercises, mm-hmm. which will be experimental in nature, which is sort of how I practice my writing practices. So that's kind of a nice level playing field too, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're using sort of found language or found items to then craft a creative response to them. So it mm-hmm. anyone can do that. And it's very playful and it's very low stakes, right. You know. But building upon the idea of, like, the poem belongs to everyone, the angle of my workshop too is that we can make books. Books also belong to everyone. So books mm-hmm. are, like, wonderful democratic objects, but also they can be quite elitist objects too, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't publish yourself. Other people publish you. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've been working through my press, Poinciana Paper Press, and through my workshops and my teaching to dismantle. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to show people and give them the tools and the resources and the mindset to show them that... sometimes all you need is just, like, one piece of paper and you can make a book. Mm-hmm. So we're writing a little bit, and then we're thinking about how does that narrative fit into the book structure. And we're doing a lot of just very playful folded structures. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with even just one sheet of paper, you can make it, and you can make it as simple or as elaborate as possible. And you can think about how do your words live in the structure, and how do they come together to form a new kind of narrative, an unexpected narrative, right? Mm.
All right. And so I'm glad that you guys sort of talked about the differences between the two workshops, because, again, another question I received, because we had billed it as this communal sort of activity,
yes.
with the workshop. And so people ask, can we go to one and not go to the next, or what does that mean?
Right.
And so what about high school students? Because we do have some high schoolers coming in. Is this something that they can also be a part of? Or is there a certain level of, I don't know, maturity?
Mature content, like our piece in the National
right,
Exhibition.
Right, that folks need to be aware of.
I mean, I'm not going to speak for both of us, but for me, I would definitely say no. In fact, the writing exercises I have, we're even making poems based off of emojis. We're texting each other, and I think that's, like, very teen language.
Right.
So, you know, no. And I also believe, like, we should, you know, confront mature content at any age.
We should.
Yeah.
And we, you know, quite apart from a legal standpoint.
Right.
We know very well that our teens are confronting mature content and on a day-to-day basis mm-hmm. in almost all their situations. This workshop is, in its first iteration, designed for students who are 18 years and older, but okay. it's something I can modify very easily to avoid damaging the youth. But again, I think the young people, you know, if their love is in poetry, they're not going to be afraid by anything in here.
Yeah. I agree.
And I find, too, that a lot of our younger students, we did a production of the Color Museum a couple of weeks ago, and we had a lot of high school students come in. And again, some of the themes were, mature themes in the play, but they got it, you know, and they weren't afraid to sort mm-hmm. of engage and talk about it as well. And so, again, I think that in our writing as well, and in our art, we need to start allowing our young people to sort of engage in these ideas and themes as well, because as you said, they a lot of them deal with these issues, mm-hmm. and their art might be a way to sort of work through some of the trauma that might take place. And again, I think that your work sort of speaks to that in a way. So you want to talk a little bit about...
Yeah, it can't help but speak about it, because mm-hmm. Trinidad is one of the most criminally violent places in the Caribbean and the rest of the world. And it would be impossible for any poem that I made not to deal with that in some context, even quite apart from any personal history with violence, because we also all have that.
Yes.
A shared, collective, often unspoken kind of trauma. And the workshop I've taught the most, which is not this one, but this one is just as exciting, I promise, deals with getting to the root of your own trauma and how you activate that into a poem. And I think any class that I teach will involve some element of that, because it's often the kind of work that we think we will jeopardize other people by talking about, because they're part of that collective unspoken secret. And if you break that bond of faith with either your parents or your loved ones or the church or any institution or group that you feel you owe some kind of fealty to, then you can't make good work. And I want to show that it's entirely possible to do that. And you can protect yourself and take care of yourself while doing it.
Beautiful. And Sonia, what about you? I know that you, even in the work that we did together over the summer.
Yeah, A True and Exact History.
Yeah, sort of does that, right? It sort of confronts trauma in a kind of way and deals with it in an artistic way. Do you want to talk a little bit about that work?
Yeah, the way that I like to do, to engage in confrontation is through existing narratives, disrupting those existing narratives. And I think like many existing narratives about the Caribbean are very damaging for us, historical ones and contemporary ones, right? So the way that we've been written about throughout history, and then also which informs the current narrative about like paradise, right? And then the tourism industry and how that narrative is driven. And so my writing practice aims to disrupt that through using those narratives as a basis to form my own response, like usually poetic responses. So A True and Exact History, for example, used the historic text by Richard Ligon, A True and Exact History of the Island of Barbados, which was written in 1657, to make a new narrative which sort of confronts how his sort of like white colonial voice has been privileged throughout history and at whose expense. Mm-hmm. So drawing out other voices, and I chose 11, which, as you know, in the performance, you were the Edenic Island, right? Or were you the indigenous person of the Caribbean, right? Yes. Like Patricia Glinton Miklas was the Edenic Island, because of course, like her voice was just magnificent for that role. So, yeah, thinking about drawing out different voices that have been marginalized or completely silenced throughout history, and sort of imagining what those would be like, what kind of narratives those would form, in order to sort of disrupt this like kind of linear historical arc of the Caribbean that makes us think we've come to this like sort of very civilized current moment, but which in fact is not true, because history is just like this ongoing intersectional process that always informs us and our actions.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm always trying to engage with those narratives. I've written some poems about Anne Bonny, thinking about dismantling the sort of sexist kind of narrative around her.
Mm-hmm.
And my most recent project is a book coming out later on this year called The Best Estimation in the World.
Okay.
And that's a series of poems that are extracted from interviews with people in the service industry.
Oh, wow.
Sort of engaging with the very damaging narrative of paradise and how that is problematic for our Bahamian identity.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
And so it puts me in the mindset of Ian Strawn's Paradise and Plantation.
Yeah, right? Of course. Which was hugely formative for me to read.
And again, I like that. And I can see even how what you've described sort of falls into the same category as your workshop tomorrow, in terms of thinking about, you know, the book right?
Right. The book object, I mean, publishing in our space, I think, has always been an act of survival.
Yes.
And I think there's, like, really great parts about that history, but then also, like, problematic parts. Like, why does it have to be an act of survival? Like, why haven't we been given, like, a safe platform for ourselves? And I think through work like Bocas, and now through the Blue Flamingo Literary Festival, we can start to build our own platforms and create spaces for ourselves and lift each other up, like, and be in charge of our own narratives, you know? So I'm hoping that that sort of shifts from an act of survival into maybe, like, thriving in the future. And the book can be, like, a, you know, the book is a primary tool of that, for sure. And publishing, and not, you know, publishing even beyond the book, right? Performance and, yeah, readings. Perfect. And so many other things.
So we'll take another break, and we'll be back in just a few.